Hello, my talk today is entitled Packing to World War II, Integrating the Soul Story into American History and Neuroscience Education. I'm presenting this today as an associate in the Experiment Station at the University of California. So, which is the... Integrating soil science into American history can illustrate the role soils played in important historical events, as well as increase science literacy and the knowledge of soil science as a discipline. As soil scientists, we can provide simple examples to educators on the significance of soils in history and to the present. Over the years, I've done quite a bit of work either with the National Park Service or with the Smithsonian on the Dig It exhibit. And working with different groups that are using this information, I find very often they say, I don't know the words to use when it comes to soil science. People who aren't soil scientists get really frustrated and they feel like they don't want to mess it up and they don't want to put the words in the wrong way. Or they say that soil seems so complicated that I can't even talk about them in my presentation because it's just too complicated. So one thing I would like to show today is three National Park Service properties that that illustrate the role of incorporating soil science into American history lessons. All this information was just taken from regular National Cooperative Soil Survey soil mapping and working with the National Park Service to help understand how soils played an important part on the landscapes of our national parks. To begin with, I wanted to start in 1100 AD at Wupakki National Monument. Wupakki is located in northern Arizona, just north of Flagstaff. Just to give you an idea for some of you who may not be familiar with the geography. Wupakki has these pictures just show you some of the natural and cultural landscapes of Wupakki National Monument in Arizona. It's dominated by Kaibab limestone and Moencopi formations. And in the picture on the left, you can see black cinders draping the surface of the landscape there. And the other picture is a pre-Hopi dwelling that is in Wupakki National Monument that was built sometime after the 900 before present eruption of Sunset Crater to the south. This Wupakki dwelling is one of the largest pre-Hopi civilizations around that area. To further set the stage, you can see here the San Francisco peaks that lie to the north of Flagstaff. It is a large volcanic region, and Sunset Crater, in the other picture here, is another national park, national monument, that lies to the south of Wupakki. Just to give you an example, that cinder cone would be part of the whole volcanic of the San Francisco Peaks area and was actually kind of a parasitic cone to the larger and acidic volcano, which was the San Francisco Peaks. This is a general soil map of Wupakki National Monument that is just now being completed and published. And here you can see differences in the landscape. You have a more rumpled landscape to the right. That is a typic aridic area of soils forming in Moencopi sandstone. And the Antelope Prairie off to the left is on the Kaibab limestone. Most of the ruins of the pre-Hopi civilization lie along this fault line that you can see that separates the two. And the pre-Hopi civilization are known as the Sinagua, or without water. And they lived in these landscapes with very little water. Here you can see an example of the Sunset Crater cinders that drape the landscape of Wupakki, which lies to the north. you can see the very dark surface. You can see the scattered grasses on the landscape where there's thick black cinders. And here's a profile box that was taken as part of the National Cooperative Soil Survey, soil mapping there, showing the thick cinder surface over top the red Moenkopi-derived soil. This is an ashy over loamy, classy over mixed, superactive, non-acid, mesic, vitrandic dioxin. And to most people, you know, soil scientists will understand that, but the soil in the box there is very clear in showing the significance of the black cinders on top of the relatively undeveloped soil underneath it. The surface acid cinder layers have been shown to be a water-retaining and temperature-moderating mulch. Mulch increases the water infiltration retention. Color can influence the albedo and therefore influence soil temperature and increase moisture retention through condensation. And the surface has reduced airflow and thus reducing wind erosion, soil desiccation. And also you have decreased salinization. And here you see a profile of the soil at Wupaki National Monument. Around 1250 AD, Wupaki settlements were abandoned. Tree ring and archaeological evidence suggest that increasingly dry, semi-arid climate reduces the soil water availability. Here you can see a ruin in the picture with San Francisco peaks in the background. The lesson here is that physical and chemical soil properties of cinder mulch soils aided the Sinagua people to farm lands that were formerly non-arable prior to the Sunset Crater eruptions to the south. Soils can change quickly or slowly over time, and climate change does affect soils and the people, of course, who use the soil. Now I'd like to switch to the East Coast 1754. We're in southeastern Pennsylvania. In 1754, George Washington was a newly commissioned lieutenant colonel under the British governor, Robert Dinwiddie of Virginia. Washington built a fort in the Great Meadow during an early part of the French and Indian War. He described the location as a charming field for an encounter. And this is part of the Fort Necessity National Battlefield that's operated by the National Park Service. Here you can see a soil web view Fort Necessity, and in the center of the photograph is the little fort located in a final low 0 to 2% slope that has a minor inclusion of Atkins soils and depression. Atkins soils are hydric soils and have saturation of the surface during the growing season. The significance of this is that on July 3rd, 1754, a French army captain, Louis Coulon de Villiers, quickly surrounded Washington's Great Meadows fort that he had built to avenge a battle of Jumonville Glen, where Washington's troops had earlier killed his brother. Heavy rain aided the French as Washington's fort became inundated and ammunition became wet and useless. There was no place to divert the water from the Atkins hydric soil, given landscape depression, where he had built his small, what we call a palisade fort, which was mostly used just to store his gunpowder and rum. Washington was surrounded by French troops located on the high ground around this position, and this became the very first battle of the French and Indian War that ended with George Washington's one and only military surrender. The Oak Palisade became his Oak Palisade became inundated in the low-lying position there, you can see in the block diagram. And it was after this, after his first loss in any military battle, that according to the National Park Service, when I talked to them, this was sort of the precursor to the Army Corps of Engineers, where he would send out his scouts to position his forts on high ground. And so it's essentially where he learned to take the high ground. And it was during the War for Independence. And here you can see positions of Morristown National Park and Valley Forge National Historic Park in Pennsylvania, where they are no longer located in hydric soils. Now I'd like to switch to 1942, to World War II, where more than 10,000 people of Japanese heritage lived and were relocated to these relocation centers. There were 10 camps collectively housing 120,000 internees after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. This is one of them called Manzanar, and it's on the eastern side of the Sierra Nevadas in California. Interestingly, a human-induced source of LEF, or PM10, in the vicinity of Manzanar was exposed during the draining of the Owens Lake to the south. Salt-rich LEFs travel north and south on winds funneled through the Owens Valley. The alkaline LEFs, or PM10, is composed of many minerals such as sodium chloride, sodium sulfate, sodium bicarbonate, and sodium carbonate. So here you can see the Sierra Nevada range to the west, and to the east, the Inyo Mountains, and Manzanar National Historic Site, located with the arrow. It was interesting to read a book that my daughters had read in grade school, and I remembered reading this book a long time ago, and all of it started to make sense to me, because there was an interesting chapter in the book called A Different Kind of Sand. In it, Jean Watasuki Houston, who was an internee child at Manzanar, wrote, "We woke, shivering and coated with dust that was blown up through the knotholes. Our cubicle looked as if a great laundry bag had exploded and sprayed with fine dust. His eyebrows were gray. He looked at me. He looked at my eyebrows and coated hair. Others said, 'Hey, you guys fall in the same flour barrel as us?' An icy gust of wind were buffeting our barracks every few minutes, sending fresh dust puffs up through the floorboards." This was the life of the internees at Manzanar. But in order to sustain the camps, the United States War Department broke into a deal with LA Power Water to divert some water to Manzanar for irrigation and household uses. Here you can see a picture taken by Ansel Adams of a smiling and happy Japanese internee at Manzanar. In order to make their time at Manzanar more tolerable, they spent a lot of time building these Japanese meditation gardens that you can see here. Here you can see the diversion system of that LA Power and Water would use to divert water from Northern California and the Sierra Nevada to the Los Angeles Basin. All the soils have been altered in Manzanar National Historic Site by these diversions. They're much drier. And if you look in the picture here, you can see the black swath going across the park boundary, which is the green outline there. And that's the fault line, and it was actually formerly a lot of histosols that were along that fault line that the Japanese internees actually harvested the organic soils there to amend the granitic soils that formed most of Manzanar. And they would take the organics out and harvest them and try to amend the sandy soils for their gardens. But today, it's interesting to note that LA Power and Water retains the rights to all the waters in this area, and then the law stipulates that if they don't use the water, they lose the rights to it. What has happened is LA Power and Water has had to make emergency releases from the diversions above Manzanar in order to use the water. Even though they're not using it, they're just releasing it. It's by the letter of the law, it shows that they have used it. However, this has resulted in breached and eroded Japanese meditation gardens built on and from the highly erodible soils derived from granite. And here you can see a Japanese meditation garden that was located where the Manzanar Hospital was that during recent floods, although not in the past few years because of the drought in California, but I think like 10 years ago, this Japanese meditation garden was destroyed by the emergency flood releases because the soils are very erosive, having formed from granite. Anyway, I just thought this would be an opportunity to show three simple lessons of how soils influence our history and our everyday lives. that human-induced and other natural phenomena change soils, and another lesson conveyed is that site soil properties are dependent on landscape position, geologic events, and properties that also help determine the soil use. So my question, and I, you know, if you have time, you do to involve people, is what is the best way, you know, to get this information out to people that goes beyond just having a lot of soil data in technical papers or reports, or even, you know, with our soil survey information, a lot of it is just concatenated tables and charts, but we don't really get this whole history of how soils play an important part in our lives. So if anyone has ideas or has any questions, I am here to answer them. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any questions? Yes.
Have you thought about contacting the Japanese American Museum in Los Angeles?
I have not, and that's where most of the Mazanar internees were from, but yeah, that would be one way. I have worked with the park, of course, at Mazanar, but
The museum has a whole repository for all the information on the camps,
mm-hmm.
and this would be a good place to start.
Yeah. Yeah, because we just, the information from the soils of Mazanar has just recently been put together like this, and it would be really interesting to try to incorporate that more into the interpretive parts of the park history. So.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.